We all have a resilience muscle and it's an instinct. Now, like any muscle, the more you use it, the stronger it is. And some people get to walk through life not having to use their muscle as much, where some of us have had to use it our entire life. I used to define it as bouncing back from a challenging experience, but there is no going back. You're not bouncing back. Where are you bouncing back to? And so resilience is the ability to bounce forward from a challenging experience because you're never going to be the same.
Welcome to Evolve Leadership, the arena where high-achieving leaders are challenged to redefine their limits. My name is Angus Nelson. I grew up in the United States, and I now live in Lisbon, Portugal. I'm an executive coach, and I've spent my career advising and training leaders from startups to Fortune 500 companies. And here's what I've learned. An old, ineffective leadership framework will always keep you on a hamster wheel, consumed with work-life balance, burnout, and stress. Here on the show, each week, we'll help you rethink the path to achievement. We'll help you discover new principles, new philosophies to the modern leader. Look, the world is relentlessly changing, demanding a new era of leaders. It's time to redefine your limits. So enter the arena, my friend. It's time to evolve. Well, hello there. Welcome to the Evolve Leadership Show. I'm Angus Nelson, your host. Today, we're going to talk to a resilience expert. And she is the author of a book called Resilience AF. She has her own podcast called the Radical Resilience Podcast. She's going to take us through some concepts of not only her story and how she came to know what she knows, but also what you can do to think differently about some of the challenges you face in your company and in your life. I think you're going to enjoy some of the depth and the vulnerability in the show and get a perspective of what it means to be resilient. Let's jump into that interview right now. Well, hello there, Blair. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Now, you just shared with me before we got started, you had a little oopsie on your training. Tell us what happened.
Ooh, okay. First of all, I hate feet and feet really gross me out. So this is a foot story, but I'm doing a 75 kilometer hike on something called the West Coast Trail on Vancouver Island in June. And so I've been training. So I've been hiking every day and I know I need new footwear. And because I've been wearing footwear that isn't, I'd say, as appropriate as it should be, I've suffered a foot injury and I ended up being in the ER yesterday and had to have a little procedure.
And you were a bit resilient in joining us despite your setback. So nice little setup for our conversation today. See what I did there?
Yeah. You know what was actually really, it's funny to me, like I've spent a lot of time in hospitals the last 5 years. So it was like a homecoming.
I haven't seen you guys in a while. Everybody okay? Fantastic.
You missed me?
So let's kind of start there. Let's kind of back up a little bit. You know, today we want to talk about, you know, kind of an emphasis of your life, everything from kind of your mission and how you got here. But it's also like you've got clothing lines, you've got a book all around this concept of resilience. Where did it all come from? Where did it start?
Well, it all started August 8th, 1985, when I was born. But really, I never thought I'd be a 38-year-old sober, childless, parentless bird watcher, but I am. And it really started when I was younger. I was very close with my father. And in the 80s, my dad developed a very bad addiction to drugs. And I didn't know this. My mom didn't know this. And I was very close with my dad. But when I was 7, my dad's addiction got really bad and he had to sell his business and he left the family. And I became a child of divorce and I didn't understand why my father wasn't in my life, why he would tell me he would come to my birthday party and not show up or tell me he would pick me up for family time for McDonald's and like call me and be like, I'm running late and do that again and again and then not show up. I thought my dad stopped loving me. And so growing up, I had a lot of anger, resentment, abandonment issues, undiagnosed depression, anxiety. you know, someone, one of the most important people in my life, I thought stopped loving me. And no one talked to me about my parents getting divorced. No one talked to me about my dad. And if they did, it was mostly in the not so positive light. And so I had a lot of anger and hate. But in my 20s, I actually went to a personal development weekend, and I was given the tools I needed to forgive my dad. And I wasn't looking to. It happened. And my dad and I, that during that weekend, had a beautiful conversation. I decided to accept him for who he was, and whatever relationship he was able to give me, I'll accept it. And we began a really beautiful journey. And I never thought I'd have a second chance, but he would come to visit me. I'm from the middle of Canada, and I lived on the West Coast. And so he would come and visit me a couple times a year. And I got my father back. I got another chance. He walked me down the aisle at my wedding with my mom. But at the end of 2018, we learned he was terminally ill, and I felt robbed. Like, I just had gotten back in my life, and now he's being taken away from me. And I didn't know really how to process that. And I started sharing our story. I started letting those skeletons out of the closet with anyone who would listen. Like, I was just trying to process what's happening. And I'd go for coffee with friends and talk to people on the phone, and I was getting feedback. Blair, wow, your story of your forgiveness and your dad's addiction and your resilience has inspired me to forgive my dad before they pass away. Your story has inspired me to get a therapist. Your story has inspired me to be sober. So I went to my dad and I said, what if we write a book and we gather stories of resilience from around the world? And then we bookend this book with your story at the beginning and mine at the end. So when you're no longer here, we can still help people. Mm-hmm. And so March 2019, we started the Global Resilience Project. When I say we, it's me. And I thought that I would just be focusing on the book and my dad's end of life and making memories. But I really was tested about my resilience. And from when we launched the project until the first book coming out 3 years later, I lost my grandfather, who was like my dad. He helped raise me. That was sad. On the way home from his funeral, we got in a car accident and I got a brain injury, like a concussion. A couple months later, my husband almost died. He had a heart attack and open heart surgery, a quadruple bypass surgery. And a few months later, it was the pandemic. We learned that fertility was not maybe in our cards, that we would struggle. We were struggling with it. We were trying to have children, and that I had to go for further tests and it might not be possible naturally. That was devastating. And then about a year after Shane's heart attack, we got pregnant without trying because we kind of gave up. That was exciting. But unfortunately, we miscarried. And then 3 weeks after the miscarriage, my father-in-law suddenly died after a three-week battle with cancer. And then 3 months later, my mother suddenly died after a three-week battle with cancer. And then my father, who miraculously like outlived my mom, because he was very unwell, he died the same year as my mom, 360 days later. So I wanted to give up many times on many levels. I mean, holding space for people's stories of resilience while trying to survive and run a business. I have a marketing and PR company. It was hard, but I put one foot in front of the other. And my father died in February. And by June, we got our book out. It became an international bestseller. And what I realized was that I ended up starting a global movement, because during those 3 years, we started a podcast, we launched a merchandise line, I became a motivational speaker and a writer about grief and resilience. And we started putting on events, and people wanted this space, people wanted that information, and we were helping people heal. And so that brings us to where we are today. Oh, and also then we put out another book that just came out a month ago.
So thank you so much for sharing, and a big, big virtual hug from all the way in Lisbon, Portugal to Canada. When you look at, you know, all of the storyline, I like to say that life prepares us for what life has prepared for us. Like, it doesn't matter what the situation is, hard or dark and dire as it can be. And whatever we've gone through is like, it gives us the opportunity to learn something about ourselves, learn something about humanity. It gets us to open our eyes to see or do or take action on things we otherwise never would or were never ready to. And it becomes an emphasis or a kind of a catalyst to our own growth and transformation if we will allow it. For you, going through, you know, your 20s and you made this transition and turned it into growth from the tragedy or the trauma that you experienced, and then to have all of these things move forward in your life, or flash forward in your life, what has it been about resilience and that tenacity or that perseverance? What would you say are some of the key components of you staying grounded and present?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and the word resilience, I don't really think I heard a lot about it in my childhood, my 20s. But when I learned my dad was terminal, I decided to use this word. And then the pandemic happened, and then the word became a buzzword. But what I really learned was that we all have a resilience muscle, and it's not something you're going to see on like a body map in an anatomy class or biology class, but it's this invisible muscle that's running through every fiber of our being. And it's an instinct. Being resilient is an instinct. And we all have this ability. Now, like any muscle, the more you use it, the stronger it is. And some people get to walk through life not having to use their muscle as much, where some of us have had to use it our entire life. And I really had to think about what resilience is, because I used to define it as bouncing back from a challenging experience. But I was doing some deep healing and I started thinking about what is resilience. And there is no going back. You're not bouncing back. Where are you bouncing back to? And so resilience is the ability to bounce forward from a challenging experience, because you're never going to be the same. And I think that when life gives you a hard challenge, and that can be different levels for different people, and there's no right or wrong, you get through it. You don't know, you're not like, I need to activate my resilience muscle, or oh my gosh, like what are the things I need to do? Like, you go into survival mode and you put one foot in front of the other. And I mean, because I've kind of been in survival mode before, and I've had a lot of other traumatic things happen. You know, like I fled an abusive relationship and I was briefly homeless. Like I'm sober now. Like I've had a lot of things happen. And I think that you are naturally meant to survive. And you don't always know how you're going to get through it, but you do. And it's always in hindsight and in that reflection that you're able to look at, this is what I did. But there are things that you can do to rewire your brain to be more resilient. So there are things based on neuroscience that you can do. So while life isn't super hard, there are things you can do so when life does get hard, you're prepared to go through it a little bit easier, maybe a little bit faster. And there are things you can do while you're going through the challenge to help you navigate it with a bit more grace.
Okay. So you're now an entrepreneur. And you thrusted yourself into, you have to check out her clothing line. Good grief. Literally good grief. The tongue in cheek of that is fantastic, by the way, throughout that clothing line. And then you've got the books and, like you said, the organization, the one person organization in this movement, like all of these different things that you are putting yourself as an entrepreneur. I've got tons of listeners, you at home, you in the car, you washing your dishes, you mowing the lawn, wherever you might be finding yourself, you're facing challenges where you have to raise a new round. You've got pressures from perhaps venture capital, or maybe you took a loan or an SBA loan, or maybe you've got some family money, or maybe it's just your own, and you're feeling the stress and the strain of entrepreneurship, because we are a different species. We're a completely different way of thinking. And you said something earlier about rewiring your brain to prepare for resilience. And what I've observed is that those that have been through difficulties and get into entrepreneurship seem to handle it a little bit more tactfully or a little bit more gracefully than someone who has not. Someone who hasn't been rejected, someone who hasn't been told no, someone who hasn't had, you know, the bumps and bruises and had to face that, you know, muscle being flexed. That challenge is sometimes insurmountable for them. Can you share some of the exercises that would prepare someone's brain for resilience?
Yeah. And I think this is really important because it's funny. I've been doing things my entire career that I didn't know were doing this. And I just want to give a little side quest, a side story. So I used to work for a company called Lululemon. You may have heard of it.
Yep.
In 05 to 08. And I left my job to start my PR company when I was 23 in 2008 at the beginning of the recession. And starting one business was hard enough. But I actually also started a second company by accident because I wanted free yoga. Like I started a health and wellness coupon company. Like long story short, like I ended up building a group buy model after it was a coupon book, then an online community, then a group buy model for health and wellness. And like the moral of the story is just pay for yoga. You don't need to like build a coupon company to get free yoga. But part of that, my mom was my first investor and my only investor. And she and I, because it was so stressful, like I had now a PR company and then I had this coupon company and I'm living in one of the most expensive cities in the world. And my mom and I started every day, we would text each other really positive things. And so I decided I want to create something that people can put on their websites that's branded. And so this is 2008 or 2009 now. And it was a free embeddable widget that people can put on their website from the company. And every day it was uploaded, every day it was updated with something new and positive. And it was called the Daily Emotional Forecast. And it obviously does not exist to this day. Like things were very different in 2008 and 2009. But it's interesting because in 2016, I watched this video. And this video was Sean Acor from The Happiness Advantage. And essentially what he says is that if you practice gratitude every single day at the exact same time, and you list three things from the last 24 hours that you're grateful for, and you do this for a minimum 21 days, you'll start to see the world in a more positive way. And I was like, well, that seems too easy and it's free. And I like free. So I set my phone alarm to 9 p.m. I labeled it the gratitude alarm and it's been going off every single day since. And I'm talking like when people are like, how do you think you got through it? And I'm like, it's a mix of a lot of things, but this one thing has been so important. I practiced gratitude with my husband when he was in the hospital for 3 weeks, me, him, his parents, and his roommate. My mom, my sister, and I practiced it in her hospital room the night before she went, or the night she went to sleep for her final time. Her gratitude that day was, I'm grateful for you, you, and you. And my sister and I were like, who's the third you? And she said, me. That was one of the last things she said before she died. And my dad died right at sundown. My uncle made it in time. That night we stood around practicing gratitude. And what I like about the time I chose 9 o'clock is because I go to bed early and that's my end of day. And my end of, it's just a really nice way to end a day, especially if I've had challenges that day or a hard day. And sometimes I'm just grateful the day is over for my bed and for Advil. But this gratitude practice, I could bet on a lot of my survival has been because of this one practice. So that's one really important way to, you know, rewire your brain, strengthen your resilience muscle. The glass becomes half full.
Mm-hmm. And when you've implemented gratitude into your business, you have described you have 14 things going on. You've got plates spinning. how do you keep your shit together?
Who said my shit's together? I'm honest. Like, you know, so I don't do it all on my own. Like, obviously, like I try to do it on my own because I'm an entrepreneur, but we're not meant to do it alone. I brought my sister into the Global Resilience Project. She's our mental health director, Alana. Mm-hmm. She's a therapist. I've hired an OBM. So basically a project manager who basically tells me like, Blair, you need this. Like, I'm going to do these things for you. And I'm, okay, great. Yeah. I have a graphic designer. Yes, I can create stuff in Canva, but I have a graphic designer and I have an editor. And when I have people I can hire, I have a web team. So, you're not meant to do it all alone. And also when my shit's not together, I'm honest about it. If I'm going to drop a ball, I drop a ball and call it. Like, you know, if something's going to be late, if I'm going to be late on a deliverable, I'm honest about it because mental health and your health is important. And I'm not going to burn the candle at both ends and pull all these all-nighters to deliver something unless it's one of those like, oh God, the world's going to explode if you know you don't do it. I take accountability. Mm-hmm. You know, when I remember I'm an entrepreneur. Like my bread and butter is my Blair Kaplan Communications. And, you know, I've been doing that for 16 years. And I was just, I brought on a whole bunch of clients right when the miscarriage happened, Dave died, and my mother. And I dropped a lot of balls. And some clients were not okay with that.
Yeah.
They no longer were my clients. What was I going to do? Some clients were more than accepting. They were supportive. And I think that's the thing, like, as entrepreneurs, we want to make everyone happy and please everyone, and we need to make money. But if you don't have your health, and mental health is in there, like if you don't have your mental health, you can't pour from an empty cup. How can you serve your clients? Mm-hmm. And my mom dying was not on my radar. Yes, the miscarriage rocked me, but I was still able to function. I was just very sad. Dave dying was really upsetting as well. And it was kind of going into the holiday season. It was November. So like I had that to kind of like, everyone was busy with holidays. So it kind of was okay. Like I was able to still do my work and show up when I could. And it was, you know, kind of blended in. But when my mom died, I wasn't prepared for it. My mom's mom lived to her 90s and her diet was chicken fingers and Chinese food. So like in my head, my mom was going to live to her 90s. But she learned she had cancer, was told she would be fine, went into the hospital because she was in pain. And they said, you have 2 weeks left to live. And she died 3 days later. I wasn't thinking about that. I didn't have like someone on my team to like take over my work. I still actually had to show up sometimes because I had to make money. And what I wish I would have done was I wish I already had it. I wish I had my OBM. I wish I would have had a bit of a plan in place that like if I had an emergency happened and I stepped away, that like I knew that someone would be able to communicate or take over for me. But I mean, I think like you don't need to be okay and you don't need to pretend you're okay. And I think by having those honest conversations with your clients who are also humans, they should understand. I mean, and if they don't understand, sometimes they'll understand later in hindsight. And if they just don't, they're an asshole.
Yeah.
And what like, about- I'm like core values first, then money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I feel you. When you think about, you know, by the way, SOPs, everyone, build your SOPs so you can bring people in and take over standard operating procedures.
And honestly, if you or hire someone to build your SOP, my OBM is great. She's like, how do you do this? Make a video. And she builds up my SOPs.
My EA, same thing. Like I don't build these things unless, you know, they're just starting. Then I might shoot a Loom video and, you know, dot, dot, dot. But I'll say, and you perfect this, you make it better. You. I love people that know how to dot the I's and cross the T's because I am not that person.
Before we continue, I want to acknowledge something important. By listening to this show, you are taking a step that many leaders are frankly unwilling to do, and that is invest in yourself. And to honor your commitment, we want to invest in you. Our research shows that elite leaders excel in six core areas, and we've developed a quick 2-minute assessment to help you highlight your strengths, uncover your blind spots, and see how you stack up against other top leaders. You'll get a personalized report that pinpoints the areas you can address to evolve into that next level leader. So, to see where your leadership stands, go to rankmyleadership.com. Now, back to the show.
Yeah. And you know what? And I just want to say, like, if you don't have an SOP and shit hits the fan and you need to like step away, you could always rebuild. It's okay. If things burn to the ground, build it again. We have Phoenix rising. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's going to feel shitty, but you're never like, if someone's sick and dying, like you're never going to have more time.
Yeah.
Like go spend the time with your family and let balls drop elsewhere.
Let's dive into that a little bit, because that goes against some of the ego, goes against some of the common like standard practice for our westernized society is they believe they need to sacrifice all for all expense. What is your observation when you're talking to a fellow entrepreneur who's, you know, burn the boats and they're all in on building their business, but negating their own well-being, their own sanity, and their own relationships?
that was me. I've had relationships end. I've sacrificed my social life, my health. When my mom died, she was 62. My dad was 66, and he was very unwell. Like, he was on like a medical disability. My father-in-law was 66. My mom and my dad and my father-in-law didn't get to live the life they wanted. My mom, all she talked about was when I retire, when I retire, when I retire. Same with my father-in-law. Three parents dying in their 60s, and my husband in his early 40s almost died. My own mortality was questioned. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a nervous breakdown, but I had a midlife crisis. I was like, okay, well, I know I'm not having kids. We're not having kids. And I'm good with that. Mm-hmm. We decided, but I'm just going to be a mother to many and cool mm-hmm. Auntie Blair. Yeah. But I was like, the work I'm going to do in this world is to help people strengthen their resilience muscle. But also, I was like, well, I don't have kids. I'm not going to die with my money. And there's this huge laundry list, not even a laundry list, a bucket list, huge bucket list of things I want to do. And I got to go do them, because if I'm almost 40 and my mom died in her 60s, I only maybe have 20 years left.
Yeah.
My mortality is questioned, because if I think about how fast the last 10 years went, 15 years went, 20 years went, 20 years is going to go by like that. And so I kind of like went very extreme, and I went to Africa and I helped open a children's center for at-risk youth, not through a program. I met a man on the internet, liked his mission, believed in him. And it was a very interesting story for another time. Yeah. And then I went to Uganda and I tracked gorillas in the Bundi impenetrable forest, which was a bucket list item. And then I went to Croatia and I traveled around there, and I spent 5 weeks away from home really trying to find myself. And I needed that to re-put my feet on the ground. And I came back with like, okay, like, you still need to make money. You shouldn't spend every single penny to your name, that I did. Cause I was like, I'm probably going to die anyways tomorrow. Yeah. And it's okay. I'll rebuild. Like, literally, like, I didn't burn it to the ground, but I don't know. I had to go track gorillas. But I didn't, that was the first time in my business that I wasn't doing any business development leading up to the trip or while I was gone. So there was like 10 weeks there of probably no business development. And I had a couple clients, and one of my bigger clients, because of the economy, put me on pause. Mm-hmm. And then I came back and I had to rebuild. That was the first time it's ever happened to me. And I have no regrets. Like, but anyways, so the question is, I sacrificed time with my mom and my family, and even with my husband. Like, I travel if there's something I want to do, and he might not come with me. And when I came back, my like feet got planted and I got regrounded. I went through a really deep depression just because of the stuff I saw in the world, and like how some people with so little in, you know, Ghana are the happiest people I've ever met, and just like really questioning my place on this planet and like also my lifespan. And really, my advice, like, no one's going to remember that you worked 15 hours a day, and being busy isn't a badge of honor. And the one thing you're never going to get is more time. You're never going to get more time, and especially with the people you love. I thought I was going to have at least another 30 years with my mom, and I had a couple days. I had a couple days. And you never know what can happen. Like, are you sacrificing because you have, like, why are you sacrificing that time with your family? Are you avoiding them because you're not happy? Are you, you know, trying to make ends meet? Like, what is the reason? And like, you can work backwards, but we shouldn't have to sacrifice time doing the things we love with the people we love because we're trying to prove ourselves to the other people in the same, like, circle of ego. Mm-hmm. And you know what? You're so focused probably that you're not really actually paying attention to your competitors who are also sacrificing all the good things in life to make money. And honestly, your money doesn't really bring you happiness. Like, are you happy? Because I can tell you the happiest I've been. Like, yeah, like, I spent a lot of money, but like, on my trip, and it was because I had a bit of an inheritance, like, I'm, you know, but some of the happiest moments are when I'm not, like, I'm out in the woods camping or hiking with my friends and family, or, you know, in nature. It's not about like me, you know, taking my huge paycheck or, you know, all the money in my bank and buying things. And coming back from Africa, I was like, I don't need things. Like, I drive a 2010 CRV. Like, I would like maybe a little bit newer of a CRV, but like, I'm an experienced person and I'm a legacy person. And what do I want to leave on this planet when I'm no longer here? And I think that's an important question for you out there listening who are, you know, burning the candle at both ends, sacrificing really important time with your kids, your partner, your parents, your friends. Yeah. You're never going to get more time. And like, I'm 38. So some of you might be a lot younger. Some of you might be a little bit more vintage. How many people do you know who have died? Because I can tell you that my husband's friend just passed away. It's almost like every month I'm learning of one new person that's very close in my circle who's dying. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking in my age range.
Yeah.
Let alone parents. I'm watching all my friends navigate parents' illnesses, end of life. So, you know, you do the math, like what's important to you?
I know in particular, what's important to me is being known as vintage. I will embrace that term 100%.
I actually tell people because the term geriatric millennial is a thing. I'm like, I am not geriatric. I'm a vintage millennial. And so that's what I use now instead of like geriatric or old.
So I was going to ask you this question, you know, this next generation of entrepreneurs, you know, what would you recommend for them? You know, what advice would you give to them? I think you just laid it out so plain. You know, is this concept, and this is why we live in Portugal, is for all those same reasons. You know, we're in the middle of the pandemic and we're like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Like, let's go see the world. Let's give our kids a European experience. Let's go see the world through a different lens. Mm-hmm. Let's stretch our boundaries and be surrounded by different languages. I got my ass kicked at the gym this morning with my trainer. And he barely speaks English. I barely speak Portuguese. And we're like Portuguese, you know, as we're trying to like work through things. And I'm like, how do you say wide? You know, como se diz wide? And he's wide, wide. I said, like this. He goes, oh, distant. I said, this is something like distant. I don't know if that's the same. But what is this one? This is a crepe. I don't know. Preto, peto. Can't say. All of these are adventures. Mm-hmm. All of these shape us. All of these form us and they give us a new perspective. What was Blair like before trolloping through Africa and at all versus the Blair that landed when she got back?
The Blair that left for her trip felt like there was a sense of urgency to do all the things at once because she was going to die. And she kind of didn't like. She put herself first in a way that she never had before. As in, no one else's opinions mattered. And coming back, I re-understood the value of money. I re-understood the value of happiness. And I think I re-understood the value of life. Because I was, you know, right outside of Accra, which is one of the main cities in Ghana. There's a area, the Volta region, this little town, Hohoi, Wegbe, they call it America Town. This is where this children's center is. You know, I was sitting there and it's a different part of the world, like very far away, very different. Like, I felt like I was kind of going back in time and things were more simple. And, you know, watching kids walk back from like the river with buckets of water on their head and just meeting kids at the center who like went to the forest, chopped down bamboo, brought it back, who are like 11 and 12 or 10 and 11, built pergolas and fences. And then thinking about what kids are like in North America at 11 and 12, where these kids are just dreaming of that type of life. But these kids are very happy and curious. And that really got me thinking about, you know, the Western world and, you know, are we happy? Do we know what happy is? Are we being told we're happy and we're thinking we're happy? I mean, I'm on antidepressants. I'm on Zoloft. I've tried to go off them. I learned the hard way that I need to be on antidepressants. But I think we are just so inundated with stuff here. Social media, technology, like, are we on our little screen while watching the big screen? Because we just got off the medium-sized screen. And then we have our watch on our screen as on our, and we're so inundated. And there's ads and negative media and all this stuff. We're like, we don't know how to feel anymore. or were confused. You know, swamp water, like, you know, when you go to the pop station and you pour like Coke and Sprite, it's called swamp water. And I think coming back, I was really depressed because like I felt like everything I kind of knew about like happiness wasn't right. And I didn't know. Like, it took me a while to integrate because I went from there to being with like really high level, very successful, like hot, you know, seven figure entrepreneurs. Like, I went from hanging out with people whose mattresses are on like the ground. If they have a mattress, some have no hot water, some don't even have, they have eat one meal of rice a day, to like tracking gorillas in the jungle. And I was at a 5-star lodge, had my own cabin, and they woke me up, my own cottage, like my own like fireplace. And like every day they woke me up with like a latte and warm cashews. And it was just such a mind boggling experience of like the level of existence I saw to like what I was experiencing in like matter of days. And I came back and I'm like, you know, I want to make a difference. And why do I want to make money? I know how much I need to survive. Again, I told you, like 2010 CRV, like I'm not a high maintenance person. Like, we live in a modest home. We're renovating it. That's expensive. But you know, I'm not a stuff person. Like, I like sentimental things. Like, I buy art when I travel. And when I say art, it's like something someone on the side of the street paints. It's cool and I'll buy it. But why do I want to make money? And I know that the more money I do make, the bigger impact I can have, because the Global Resilience Project is a social enterprise. And that's how we were able to open a children's center for at-risk youth. The Good Grief shirts, we donate a portion of that to Camp Aaron, which is a summer camp that supports children who are navigating grief of parents and siblings. And the more money I make, the more I can put into the project, the more I can help, the more we can give back to the community. And I know that even if I make enough money to survive, the work I'm doing through the project is always going to be enough, but there's always more we can do. And I got very clear on why do I want to make money. Like, I've never made $1 million. I'm not going to even pretend I've made like $500,000. I'm good at making, you know, multiple six figures, like consistently, but I want to make $1 million because I want that experience. But I also know the impact I can make with that.
Yep. 100%.
And yeah. And I just like, there's, and I want to help. There's so many people I want to help. And it's just the world. There's a lot of people there that need our help. Like, imagine.
Well, let me pause for a second. Yeah. Let me pause a second. How can people help you? How can our listeners support, you know, what you're doing with the resilience, you know, project?
Yeah, a big way to support us is you can go to our website, theglobalresilienceproject.com. You can buy merchandise on that. You can buy we have two books available, The Global Resilience Project. That's the name of the first book. The second book is Resilient AF, Stories of Resilience. And if you have a story you want to tell, you can reach out to us through the website, because we are accepting submissions for our third book. And you can just follow us on social media, Global Resilience Community, spread our word. Like, maybe someone in your life is struggling. Maybe they need to know we exist, because we are that safe space for people to share their stories and to heal.
Lastly, someone's listening to this and they're like in the throes. They're not happy. They're going through the stuff. And they're having sleepless nights, waking up 2-3 in the morning, staring at the ceiling in hot sweats, and their heart is pounding. They're just trying to make it. What do you tell them?
Well, you're not going to feel like this forever, but you have to want to make change. And it's totally okay to not be okay. And there are things you can look at in what you're doing that you can remove from your life. How you start your day matters. And it's important to share your story. And so that might mean waking up and journaling. Maybe it's time to get a counselor or a therapist who might recommend medication or certain breath work. But there are people and resources out there that can help you.
I love it. And been there, If you are listening, you are not the only one. And Blair has shared her stories. If you've listened to this show long enough, you've heard mine. And we're at a place where the whole element of evolved leadership is to this point of being real, being tangible, reassessing, reevaluating, and recreating who we wish to be to change the world. Thanks so much for listening. Blair, thank you so much for being a part of this. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, me personally, I am very big on Instagram and LinkedIn. Blair from Blairland on Instagram. Or follow me on LinkedIn, Blair Kaplan Venables.
And if they want to strengthen their resilience muscle, where can they go?
TheGlobalResilienceProject.com.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll have links in the show notes. We've also got a workbook for you to go through on the 5 secrets to strengthening your resilience muscle. You can find that link in the show notes. Really appreciate you being here, Blair, having an honest and real conversation.
Thanks for having me.
As we wrap up another episode of Evolve Leadership, thank you so much for taking time to invest in you. If there's to be any sustainable growth in your company or even in your relationships, you must grow first. And it's what I love to do for leaders, to help them grow, to challenge their thinking, sharpen self-awareness, to instill an unshakable confidence, and ultimately upgrade their sense of self. And we do this through our proprietary method called Agile EQ Plus, where we're leveraging agile leadership and emotional intelligence. We provide our signature training for individuals, and for businesses, we've designed a unique curriculum for company-wide learning and development. If you'd like to learn more about our training or to schedule a call, you can simply go to evolveleadership.org. And until next time, stay driven, keep climbing, and never stop evolving.